Verdugo back to the pen. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of the TC and Company podcast. 3 weeks, less than 3 weeks. In fact, 3 weeks from today will be the American League wildcard game, or at least that's the schedule. It could get pushed back because we could have play-in games leading up to the wildcard game. What a strange trip it has been in this wildcard race over the last few weeks. As y'all know, the Red Sox now technically sitting on the outside. They're a percentage point behind the Yankees coming into play on Tuesday after losing another gut-wrenching loss out in Seattle. 1-3 on this road trip. They're 1-6-1 in their last eight series against teams with winning records. So still trying to prove they can beat good teams if they want to get to their destination in October. But the Blue Jays are just tearing up everybody right now. They did it over the weekend against the Baltimore Orioles. They did it in game one against the Tampa Bay Rays. And as the Red Sox go to wrap up the series Wednesday afternoon in Seattle, the Blue Jays will also wrap up their series with afternoon baseball. So a lot of scoreboard watching. And more than anything, the Toronto Blue Jays seem to be the only team trying to take this wild card. Yankees, since their 13-game winning streak, I think are 4-13 in 17 games. When they won their 13th straight game, they were 9.5 games ahead of the Toronto Blue Jays and 3 games ahead of the Red Sox. Since then, the Yankees have fallen 10.5 games in the standings in comparison to the Toronto Blue Jays, who now have the top spot. They demolished Orioles pitching over the weekend, 44 runs in 3 games. 2 of those games were 7-inning games, and then opened up with an 8-1 win against the first-place Tampa Bay Rays on Monday night. Vladimir Guerrero hit his 45th home run, moving ahead of Shohei Ohtani for the major league lead, and had fans chanting MVP up at Rogers Center in Toronto. So while we usually dive in deep on the Red Sox each week, we thought this was a good chance to find out what the heck is going on in Toronto. Red Sox don't play the Blue Jays again, so you're not going to see them head-to-head. And the great Hazel May, who was with us a long time ago now here at Nesson, was around in 04 when the Red Sox reversed the curse and won the World Series. Such a wonderful person and such a great baseball reporter. Went on to the MLB Network and is now up at Sportsnet in Canada, sideline reporter for the Toronto Blue Jays. She's had a front row seat for one of the great runs we've seen in September baseball over the last 20 years. So Hazel May dropped by to discuss this wild card race and the incredible offense of the Toronto Blue Jays. Hazel May, this week's guest on TC and Company. All right, very few people have any kind of career in Boston and come away universally loved. I can count them on one hand, and one of those people joined me now, Hazel May. Maybe the key is to get out of here. See, I overstayed my welcome. You got out of here while you were still universally loved. It was brilliant.
And then I handed out some checks on my way out the door.
How you doing, Hayes?
Good. Nice to see you, TC. This is like such a cool thing to do with you.
Well, it's TC and Company, so you are company. Oh, congratulations.
Okay. And I've been called worse.
But again, not in Boston. They love you here. I have to float this idea, and you know, Fred Nutter, who runs our digital, I'm like, you know, Hazel. Yeah, I mean, most of the people I bring up, like, does anybody want to hear? And they're all like jumping up and down that I'm bringing Hazel May on the show.
So awesome.
Maybe it'll just be the TC and Hazel podcast next year, and we'll finally get more listeners. But anyway, well, you are here because every night I'm sick of talking about let's go to TC for an update. Well, they've just scored 15 runs in the fifth inning. What is going on with this Blue Jays team? It's incredible.
But it is. I will say they are on some kind of run. But if you had checked in with me, say, 3, maybe 4 weeks ago, totally different story. I think they were out 6.5, maybe 7 games out of that second wild card spot. And the only guy in what on paper is a pretty good offense, supposed to be one of the best in the league, was Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who typically does well in the final months of the season. I mean, Teoscar was slumping, Vladdy was slumping. And I mean, slumping is, you know, going for Vladdy, going from like a 350 average to like a 312 average. But for some reason, TC, they've just all, it's just been timely. They all got it out of their slumps at the same time. And it just so happened to be September. It is quite remarkable that they made up, what, nine, almost 10 games over the last couple of weeks. So it hasn't always been that case. They had a terrific start of the season. They had a so-so July. They had a not so great August. And it just so happens, you know, Charlie Montoyo said, you know, hitting is contagious, but he feels that when the guys are slumping, it's kind of contagious as well. And like I said, Gurriel Jr. is the only guy who had been hitting over the last month or so. So it's just been timely for them.
Yeah, you know, it's a great, I was looking at August 27th was when the Yankees won their 13th straight game.
Yeah.
And again, the Red Sox were in the second spot, but the Blue Jays were 9.5 back of the Yankees, right? So that's, so what is today? Today's the 14th. So in 18 days, they made up 10.5 games on the Yankees, which is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And, you know, I think from the outside, when they were slumping, you know, all the pundits were, they would have to go like 21-9 in the last 30 games. And yesterday I just taped a post game hit with my colleague who said now they can go like 11-8. They can go 10-9. They can play okay and still get to 90 wins, which we all believe is what it takes to get to those wild card positions.
Yeah. We were doing that a month ago. We're saying all they have to do is play 500 and they'll be fine. And guess what? They haven't played 500. So that's what happens. I mean, that's the other part of it. You could have won all those games.
Yeah.
And if the Yankees are playing 600 baseball and the Red Sox are playing 550 baseball, you're still four games out of the wild card.
Correct. And no more head-to-head battles with the Red Sox. Right. So the Blue Jays really had to depend on help. You know, they had to depend on the Twins to be spoilers and anybody else that was playing anybody within those four or five teams for the wild card. It just, you know, I just shake my head because I think 2 weeks ago, I was already figuring out, geez, where should I go for my off season? I'm not going to be doing much in October. And now it's, I'm going to-
Little known fact, when you cover baseball for a living, there's always those two parts of your brain. There's the one going, oh, this is great, they're winning.
Yeah.
And then the other part that says, oh, they're losing, I'm going to go to the Caribbean in October. That's okay.
That's where, you know, I had the bathing suit picked out already 2 weeks ago. And now it's just thrown me in this, like, you know, kerfuffle. And, you know, I tell people, they say, you know, what is it? Is it just the offense? And it isn't. As you know, TC, it takes good pitching, it takes a solid bullpen, it takes your offense. And for most of the season, the Blue Jays in the beginning of the year, they had great pitching. The middle of the year, they had terrible bullpen. I think they lost probably 10 to 12 games because of blown saves. And then, you know, those dog days of August, the offense kind of slumped. And I mean, lucky, or you have to be good to be lucky, everything seems to be coming together at the same time. And right now, they have so much confidence. I mean, they're playing cards. They're so relaxed. They're slapping each other on the top of the head in the dugout. And I tell people that this is a team that genuinely likes each other. When I covered the 2015-2016 Blue Jays with Josh Donaldson and Jose Bautista, Troy Tulowitzki, mind you, a veteran clubhouse, and they all got along, but they all were kind of laser focused, you know. They were, you know, on the back ends of their career. They wanted to get the job done. This is a young core that doesn't know any better. So Alek Manoah, in between innings as the starting pitcher, is joking around. He's putting the home run jacket on someone who just hit a home run. They don't know any better. So I guess in one hand, no, there's going to be that inexperience if they happen to get that wild card spot. But on the other hand, I mean, they're just playing so loose right now. And they're going into September with a ton of confidence. They feel like they just can out-hit and outscore the world right now.
Last night, we had the 10 o'clock game, so we were able to watch most of the Blue Jays game at 7. And I think it was the first at-bat, maybe it was the second, for Vladdy. bases loaded or second and third, whatever it is, and he popped out and he was it. But that was as loud an MVP chant. I mean, they've been coming, but last night it felt like it was coming to a crescendo. You got a guy who's in the hunt for the triple crown, and even the slash triple crown, right? On base slugging, he could even win every category, and yet people have already mailed in their vote for Ohtani in June. So I don't know how that'll play out. But tell me a little about that sort of swell of support, because I felt last night it was tangible at the ballpark.
Absolutely. And as you know, we've only been at the Rogers Center covering these home games as of like the end of July. But since that, you know, first game, and we still have capacity limits at Rogers Center, can hold 50,000. Right now it's 15,000. We're hoping that that'll change as the province gets more vaccinated. I believe right now they're approaching 80% fully vaccinated in Ontario. So there's that. And you know, the crowd plays such a big part in, you know, any game. But yesterday, you're right. At one point, I just kind of looked around and I thought, is there really only 15,000 people here? Because it really sounded like 40,000. And those MVP chants were a lot forceful. They were genuine, and they believe that he should be neck and neck. Listen, you and I know Shohei Ohtani is like a unicorn. Like he is just unbelievable. And it would be shocking to me if Vladdy did get the MVP, but just the way he's going right now, he's 22. TC, you and I have covered a lot of young, talented baseball players, but he is so far ahead as far as his approach and his situational hitting. And, you know, he's still learning to play first base, which he's made such huge leaps as far as playing that position. It's just, and yes, he's got good genes and he grew up, you know, in the game and in clubhouses and all that, but you just kind of shake your head because you really are watching something special. I really do believe that 2020 was tough for him. As you know, a lot of criticism, a lot of people saying that, you know, he was overhyped as Baseball America's number one prospect. Then he lost the weight, and then everything just started to come together. I think there's also the maturation. He's going into his first full season in the majors, so he's got a little extra time under his belt now. So to hear those MVP chants, they really believe that this guy can be the face of this franchise for years to come. Like at 22, can you imagine if he plays another decade in Toronto? He'll only be 32. I mean, Marcus Semien is looking for a big payout. And he's what, 30, 31? You really are watching a special, special player. And it's interesting. He calls his father, Vladdy Sr., after the game every single night. And I always ask him, like, what do you guys talk about? And he says, you know, his dad watches all his games and his dad will critique this and that. And they'll have side bets as to, you know, how many all-star nods will you get? How many home runs will you get? Every time he reaches a milestone, every time Junior, there's a benchmark or a milestone. And you've seen this on various news outlets and sports stations. You'll see, you know, comparisons. And he's okay with that. You'll see comparisons, you know, Senior did it in this many games and Junior's doing it in this many games. But he tells me they are having a blast with all this. And you guys know he just passed his father as far as home runs in a season. It is unbelievable. He told a Spanish outlet at spring training that his father challenged him. This is spring training. We had no clue what he was going to do after 2020. His father challenged him to hit 50 home runs, which is mind-boggling to me because he had an up and down season in 2020. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, it looks like that might happen. It's crazy.
That home run last night, the 40, how tall are you?
Oh, 5'3" on a good day.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to think I'm like 5'8" because the air is so much better up there.
No, you must be talking. That's metric. That's Canadian. That's not, you know, 5 foot. No, but I asked because if you were at third base, you might have been able to catch that home run he hit last night. That thing was never more than 8 feet off the ground.
Charlie Montoyo said in his post-game Zoom that he swears he saw the third baseman flinch. Like, literally, like, almost, like, jump, because it was, like, headed to his noggin. I had, you know, the angle that I'm sitting, I'm kind of sitting in, right at the corner next to the dugout. And when I saw it, I thought, okay, foul ball, or, like, no chance it was going to get over that fence. But I think in our post-game show, it had like a 15-degree angle at like 114 miles. That is crazy to get, you know, that powerful of a swing on a ball that was inside that way. And again, for him to think he could do it is really remarkable.
Jim Rice did a victory lap in the post-game show because he hates launch angle. So he just wanted to keep showing that. See, look at that. Look at that. You can hit home runs without getting under it. So a lot of old school guys jumped up and cheered last night when that one left the yard. You mentioned the bullpen, and that's probably been one of the more, I think, interesting. We knew this team was going to hit, not like this, but we knew the team was going to hit. You go get Brad Hand, and we all thought that was such a great move. And it didn't work out at all. Reminds me of Eric Gagne in 2007, right? He's one of the best closers in the game. Red Sox go get him. He was awful for Boston. But it didn't derail them. They still go win a World Series. Not many teams, and Toronto's one of the exceptions this year, right? Not many teams can kind of go in on a big move. It doesn't work, but you look around and say, you know what? We're good enough. We can cut our losses and move on and be okay.
I think the big dagger began in spring training when Kirby Yates didn't even start the season because Tommy John. And then David Phelps, who was literally fantastic for, you know, a veteran guy heading up a young core of great bullpen arms, and he goes down. He was one of the more reliable arms when we knew that Kirby Yates was going to start the season. Everybody's like, oh, Phelps is still there, it'll be good. Then he goes down, and that's when you saw the chaotic, you know, the Tyler Chatwood and, you know, the AAA guys that were coming up and then going back down. It was just like trial by error. And GM Ross Atkins was throwing arms out there to see which one would stick. The Brad Hand acquisition was interesting because Ross Atkins has wanted Hand for a long time. Like, he was after him this past offseason. Things didn't work out. And when he acquired him, I think all of us in the media were like, well, he got his guy. And then his guy just really struggled. His guy didn't show up. We were like, what happened to his guy? And that was really disappointing. But, you know, thank goodness they have a core of homegrown talent. They've got Jordan Romano. They've got Julian Merriweather, who's also been, you know, has had trouble with injuries, but they just called up left-hander Ryan Barucki yesterday. Tim Mesa has been great. So I don't know how they've done it, but they actually now arrived at a spot in the season where their bullpen is reliable and consistent, and Simber and Trevor Richards has been really a huge influence on the young guys, and they're performing. So the bullpen, to me, in June and July, I was like, there's just like, how can this team win? And now they're winning because their bullpen is good. Their pitching is good. Their offense is good. I mean, I don't know what to say other than it really has come at the absolute perfect time for this team.
Well, and they might end up being home for the wild card game, which is crazy. I mean, you might not have a Blue Jay win the MVP, but you might have a Blue Jay win the Cy Young Award. Is Robbie Ray the Cy Young, which is crazy. Can you imagine us saying this in February?
Right. And in 2020, when he was acquired, and we called pitching coach Pete Walker the pitcher whisperer, because for some reason, Pete has this knack of taking these reclamation projects. And, you know, he told me his approach has always been, you know, kind of sit back, see what they're good at, and then just make tweaks. You know, he's not there to like create this perfect robotic pitcher. But as you know, with Robbie Ray, when he was in Arizona, his big thing was control and walking guys. And it is unbelievable that they found something in Robbie. And I think Robbie found something in his relationship with Pete Walker. And he was the first guy to sign this past winter. He signed back with the Blue Jays. And he found something in that relationship that could kind of grow and kind of build on. And he is just having a remarkable season. I think we were hoping that he would kind of, you know, pick up where he left off in 2020 and just kind of build. But if you told me he was going to have a Cy Young season, I would be like, come on, Robbie Ray. Like, the, and then there's Steven Matz with the injuries and inconsistency with the Mets. And he's been one of the best pitchers since the All-Star break. So again, I keep going back to, they had their bumps along the season. And I mean, it's just coming together.
To be clear, Brandon Hyde does not have a Cy Young vote, right? I mean, I don't,
you know. No, was that,
is that the strangest thing?
That was so crazy. And Charlie Montoyo said post-game that he and pitching coach Pete Walker, because a lot of people on Twitter were really upset that Charlie or Pete didn't go out there and stick up for their guy. Charlie said they thought it was DJ Stewart still yapping at Ray from because if you remember in the video, Brandon right. Hyde was kind of tucked in
yep.
almost with his foot in the tunnel, you know, yelling. And look, Charlie is not a confrontational manager. Right. That's just his personality. He's not going to go out there and body slam Brandon Hyde, let's be honest. But he just really credited Robbie Ray just for keeping his composure and keeping his focus. Because TC, there are a lot of other pitchers that would have probably stopped what they did, turned around and said, come get you some right now.
And Joe Kelly would have thrown a pitch into the dugout just to see if he could hit it. a couple things here. The Dunedin, Buffalo, Toronto journey. Do you think that has paid off? Now, I mean, is this team mentally tougher, more together, whatever, because yes. of that experience?
George Springer, who hasn't been with the team as long and just, you know, had the Buffalo experience this season, always uses the word resilient. And I really do believe that. And if nothing else, it's really galvanized. I mean, friendships, they're tighter. If you remember in 2020, they were quarantined at Rogers Center for Summer Camp 2.0. So the hotel, as you know, TC, is, you know, right at the ballpark. So there's like ways you can get down there without going outside. So they were quarantined away from their families for like a month. And so they had nobody but each other. And they were going through this experience together. It wasn't perfect. You know, they made the best of it. But I think Charlie believes that it's really helped galvanize this team, the team chemistry. If you believe in that kind of stuff, they got closer. And going from Dunedin, like their families had to move 3 times in one season. And then you add in there COVID, border. It's just been one of these, you know, crazy things. And if for some reason they get deep into the postseason, if they get into the postseason, they'll have to make a movie of this, because it is astonishing how a team can, you know, pack up and leave and have to kind of get assimilated to new surroundings, new batting cages, new turf, new housing. Like, it's just been crazy, because usually guys want to be focused on just the game. These players have had to focus on, where am I going to live? Where are my kids going to go? Is my wife going to be able to cross the border with me? Like, they've had to worry about other things that the other major league teams haven't. And they still have been able to perform. So, you know, cap tip to these guys for sure.
How high is the confidence level? I mean, they beat up, Baltimore's pitching is historically bad, right?
It's almost horrendous.
6 team ERA. But they go out and do that in game one against the Rays, which I thought was a massive statement, because you lose that game and everybody says, okay. I mean, that's where we're at with the Red Sox. Red Sox they're in the middle of the Seattle series, but they're 1-6-1 in their last 8 series against teams with winning records, right? Yeah. They have not shown in the last 2 months that they can beat good teams. So you beat up on the bad teams. And Rob Bradford was on the podcast a couple weeks ago. And he had a great line. He said the Red Sox Twitter bio should be, we still have 6 against the Orioles. Like, that should be, you know, their mission statement right now. But you know, not only do the Jays need to win these games against the Rays and others to get there, but it's also got to give them confidence come October. Like, there's a belief they can beat anybody right now. I think, I'm not sure the Yankees or the Red Sox or the A's or the Mariners have the same confidence right now that the Blue Jays have against anybody.
It is sky high. And I think, you know, we raved about the record-breaking weekend series with Baltimore. But like you said, you know, their pitching is so different from Rays pitching, Red Sox pitching, Yankees pitching. So I don't want to say you take that with a grain of salt, but if anything, it just kind of, you know, up the mojo, up that confidence level that they could hit two grand slams in a ball game, that they could put
11 runs in the last inning.
22 seconds. It was so funny because I was lucky enough to be in Baltimore and I was sitting in the front row. And every time a Blue Jay hit, the Orioles fans behind me were just like, oh, here we go. Oh, there goes another run. Oh, for F's sakes. Like, it was just like on and on through the entire game. And, you know, it didn't make them feel good, but it had to have really helped in the confidence department for the players. And to take game one, like you said, to prove people that, you know, all this offensive, you know, firepower isn't just against the Orioles. We could do it against the Rays while keeping the Rays from scoring more than one run, which is crazy because I looked up the Rays run differential. They have the third highest in the majors behind the Dodgers and the Astros with a plus 177. And Alek Manoah, this rookie, one hits them. Again, this is something, if you had told me like 3 weeks ago that they would be in this kind of scenario, I would have my doubts just given the way this whole season has gone for them.
All right. Important questions for that only sideline reporters care about. Are you you're in Baltimore. Are you a stay in the camera well on the field the whole game? Or are you a up in the press box, come down towards the end of the game?
No, I'm a loser. I stay in the camera well. Sometimes I don't even use the bathroom. I don't know how I've gotten through that. I was like, Boston is tough. And you know, to go use the restroom in the camera. But I stick it out. Now, Sunday's game in Baltimore is 90 degrees. So my producer said in my ear, go grab some shade for a couple innings and come back. But I don't know about you, TC. Like, I am there, like, through thick and thin from the beginning, from warmups till my post-game chat that we tape for our highlight program. That's what the gig is. And to be honest with you, I think that's really the only way you can get the entire story, because you'll miss things.
Well, that's where, and you know, my shtick, I go into the crowd. I end up moving around and finding, you know, whatever. Last time, I do it once in a while. Now, Jemai Webster's our sideline. I'm the host. He does a great job, but I'll fill in once in a while. And last time out, Sale was pitching, so I was posting K's with the K-man up in center field, you know. And then I have no idea what happens in the game, but I had a really, you know, silly. But the problem is you can't do that. See, I said this. So I was, as you know, I was the first sideline reporter at
Netflix.
Created the genre. And for better or worse, but I could, nobody cares about me. I can slip into the right field seats and slip out. You're Hazel May, like, you come, you know, earth moves, entourage gathers, like, you can't just go wading into a crowd of baseball fans because you would create commotion.
I always think that they think I'm like Lucy Liu from Charlie's Angels or something. I'm like, they're like, hey, can you sign my baseball? I'm like, okay. Yeah. First, I'm not Lucy Liu, and I will sign your baseball if you think I'm Hazel May, but I'm not going to sign it if you think I'm somebody else.
I occasionally get a Joe Buck if I'm wearing sunglasses. That's about as far as I get, but not they think I'm Agent Smith from The Matrix, and people scared and get run away. But all right, so let's, before we let you go, we got to touch back to your legendary stay at Nesson. What do you remember most, other than learning everything from me?
Yes.
What do you remember most about your time at Nesson?
I just remember spring training wanting so desperately, because I don't know who was chirping in my ear about this, but they said, you know, New England's very cliquey, and, you know, you're not from here. And not only are you not from here, you're from Canada. And you want to cover baseball. And I knew, you know, Red Sox Nation was like one of this most powerful fan bases where they can, you know, run off third base coaches if they think you stink. But I wanted so much to be liked. And so I'm sure I made my mistakes in the beginning, but being part of that 04 run, as you know, TC, was such a huge, when people find out that I used to work in Boston, they always say, oh, were you there? in 2004 and I said, was I there? Like, it was amazing. It will never, ever be, no matter how many World Series the Blue Jays win, and they're my hometown team. I grew up in Toronto. So I cannot really equate it. The only thing I could think of is if the Toronto Maple Leafs, who haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967, right, if they won, just the magnitude, like even though the Raptors won the NBA championship and the place, the city, the country went bananas. But when the Red Sox won for the first time in 86 years, and I hadn't even been in Boston for very long, I could just feel the angst of not winning that World Series. And when they actually did, it's something that I will never, ever, ever forget, you know, for the rest of my life. It was so much fun, wasn't it, TC?
It was like, so much fun.
The run was amazing.
It's almost, you probably, you know, I go back like every couple of, once a year probably, I go watch the 30 for 30, 4 days in October. And
you watch
it unfold. Yeah, well, I'm all over it. So there's a little, yeah, but that's fine. I didn't get paid anything. But my kids think it's cool. But you go back and look at it and it becomes more improbable. Dave Roberts once told me every time he watches the replay, it gets closer. And Terry Francona and Dave and I were talking once, and Tito said, one of these years I'm going to watch it and he's out. And it never happened. You know, like it's that close. But it's almost, it's improbable. You lived it. You know it's real, but you watch it and you're like, I can't believe that happened the way it happened.
Right. And Kevin Millar's walk, still claims is like the big, big turning point.
Of course.
But it's just everything. Again, it was special, and you felt that during the run that you were watching something that was different, that there was some like divine intervention, like it was supposed to be, and it was like destiny and all that. I really believe that while we were covering that 04 team, it was such, you know, I really feel honored to have been there because it was, you know, once in, you know, a century that kind of happened.
The Maple Leafs have felt that the last 5 years, but we won't get into that.
Right.
That this was going to be the year of destiny.
Right.
Rapid fire, because you got to go. Last final question.
Yep.
Who plays in the American League wildcard game?
Oh.
Sit here right now.
How are you going to tell me? And if I don't say the Blue Jays.
Blue Jays, Red Sox. There you go. You make everybody happy. I mean, you don't even have to believe
it.
You just,
perfect. Yeah. Red Sox, Blue Jays. Okay. Got it. That's in the
Where is it? Where's the game?
Can I put the Red Sox? Well, no, that's okay. I was going to say, let's have the Yankees be like five back at the end.
No, you know what? You know what we need? Here's what we need, honestly. And it's not, I mean, what we need, if you're a Red Sox fan, you just need to win some games and get in. Blue Jays, something. But from my point of view, I want a one-game play-in Monday between the Red Sox and the Yankees. Just like 1978 all over again, the revenge of Bucky Den at Fenway Park. Red Sox beat the Yankees Monday to face the Blue Jays on Tuesday.
That's perfect. Sign me up. I'm there.
And then now it's just me and you talking here. Who did you hate at Nesson? Come on. Who did you hate the most at Nesson? Give me some dirt. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I'll text you. That. No.
Yeah.
No.
No. Nobody. No. Because everybody loved you, so you loved everybody.
It was, I mean, again, felt very lucky to have been there in Boston and lucky to have you as a colleague and now a friend. So this was such a cool thing to do.
This was awesome. Thanks for coming on. I mean, Red Sox fans can be like, why'd they spend a half hour talking about the Blue Jays? But, you know, we don't see. That's why I wanted to do it, because we don't see you again. So whatever happens
is
going to happen separately, right? I mean, there's, like you said, there's no head-to-head here.
That's true.
Guys are going to do your thing. Sox are going to do their thing, and we'll see where it all goes.
I'll see you in
good
the wild card game.
We'll be watching. Absolutely. Sounds good to me. The great Hazel May, thanks for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. Hi.
Such a great conversation. Always great to catch up with Hazel, one of my favorite colleagues here at Nesson over the years. And so fun to watch her incredible success now up north of the border. It will be real interesting. I'd have told you 3 weeks ago that the Blue Jays had a tough time catching the Red Sox because they don't play each other. I thought the Red Sox would be able to keep their distance because the Blue Jays wouldn't have those head-to-head meetings, but it hasn't mattered. The Red Sox have stumbled. The Yankees have completely stumbled. Now the Yankees have the Orioles. So we'll see if this is their little run to make a move. Red Sox still have six with the Orioles, as we said, but this final 2.5 weeks now of the AL wildcard race is going to be wild, to say the least. So wrapping up the road trip home now, final homestand of the 2021 season for the Red Sox beginning on Friday. And that will really be interesting. You got three with the Orioles, you got two with the Mets, and then you got three with the New York Yankees. And that obviously becomes a massive series for both of those teams. So we'll talk more about where things stand next week. Who knows where we'll be at, because every day it seems to take a wild turn. Mariners trying to get back in it. A's back in action. So we'll see how it all plays out. Five teams battling for two spots, and it's going to come right down to the wire. This is what you pay for. This is why you buckle in for the bumpy ride. It has been bumpy, but the Red Sox are still alive with just a little over a dozen games remaining. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for dropping by the TC and Company podcast. And thanks to Hazel May for being our guest this week. We'll see you next week.